as we get things arranged, I am going to give everyone fair warning, because not all of you are extroverts like myself. Some of this might spook you. I'm going to give you a couple minutes to process it. Please don't run away. But today, we are not going to do our typical Sunday sermon where I get up here and preach for far too long for most of us. Instead, I'm going to do a little devotional thing, and then we are going to participate in war games. I'm going to split you all up into some squads. I'm going to give you some scenarios, and you are going to process them together to see, as we read in our scripture reading from Romans chapter 6, to no longer let sin reign in your mortal bodies, depending on your translation, but in your life, but instead to yield your body, your flesh, your physical life to God as a weapon of righteousness, instead of letting sin use your physical life as a weapon of unrighteousness. Okay? So I know that that might panic some of you, but I wanted to give you a heads up instead of just being like, and go. Okay? So while you are all processing whether or not you want to pretend like you need to use the bathroom and then disappear for the next 35 minutes or not, I want us to go through an example of what I'm asking for us to do today. Michael, could you move to the next slide? I forgot my clicker to the other one. So this is what I'm going to ask you to do. Obviously, you don't have these scenarios yet, and that's on purpose because I don't want you cheating and knowing the answer before it's time to have discussion. But you're going to get a scenario, and you're going to discuss it together. But it's the second step that I want us to see how an example, the best example, Jesus, processed through his temptation in the wilderness. So if you are looking to turn to a scripture, you can turn to Luke 4. I will not read the entire temptation narrative, but it's there for you to be able to read. It's also in a couple other gospels, but Luke 4, if you're looking for it. The devil comes to tempt Jesus after Jesus is baptized, and then the great revelation from heaven that says, "This is my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased." And then Jesus is driven by the Spirit out into the wilderness, and he fasts for 40 days, 40 nights, and then Satan comes to tempt him. And so in this, we see a couple of things that apply to normal life. Obviously, like the tongue-in-cheek version is, Satan will often tempt you when you're tired, alone, and hungry, okay? So, you know, you can utilize that. But it is one of those things where Jesus was led by the Spirit of God, not by Satan, into the wilderness during what would most of us experience would be a spiritual high, like a good thing, right? Things are going well. I just got confirmation from heaven. You know, this is going well. And then Satan comes to tempt us. It's also that Satan's pretty unoriginal. He follows the same script that he follows in the Garden of Eden, as he has with the Israelites in the wilderness, as he still does today. For thousands of years, he hasn't come up with anything new. He asks questions, he twists truth, he even quotes scripture. So if a scripture is coming to mind, do not instantaneously ascribe that to the Spirit, because Satan also does that. Especially if you're reading a scripture and it's like, great, now I can do what I want. Probably not your best indicator, okay? But let's walk through the three different temptations as we are, as what I'm hoping we're going to do. Honestly, this is new for me. That's new for all of us. So if you're here visiting and you're like, this is weird, I know. We probably won't do it anytime soon again, but this is what we're going to do. So here's the first temptation is that Satan comes and says, if you are the Son of God, turn these stones into bread. Okay, Jesus is out there fasting for 40 days. He's hungry. And Satan says, hey, you know, if you're really the Son of God, if you're really a Messiah, then you can turn rocks into food. So here's some rocks. Turn it into bread and have it eat. Now, if we were in those shoes, your gut reaction would be like, you know, not a bad idea. If I were Jesus, which we can all thank God that I'm not, I would have said, you know what? I do one better. I'll make them into pizza. But on our surface, and I've been warning us about this, that the battles we ascribe to spiritual warfare is just what's on the surface. It's your circumstances, And so our solution is, God changed my circumstances. God stopped making me hungry. God give me my promotion. God get rid of this annoying person in my life. This is where we fight. And it's not the real battle. That's what Satan's fine with you doing that. Satan's fine with you asking God to constantly change your circumstances because he's got you hooked. That your circumstances dictate your reality and your responsiveness to your situation. And then he knows that if he can make your circumstances challenging enough, you won't go to war on the important matters. So that on the surface level, the physical need. Jesus is hungry. He's in the wilderness, so there's not a lot of food out there. It happens to be a lot of rocks. But the real battle is whether or not Jesus is going to trust in God's timing and provision. Just like the Israelites in the wilderness. They didn't do such a good job of that. And Jesus knows that, yes, I can turn rocks into bread. I could eat. I have authority to do that. But instead, I am going to trust in God's provision instead of my own provision. So Jesus rejects the temptation to rely on himself, even though he could rely on himself because he's God. And then he quotes scripture. So he goes from identifying the tactic, right? He's like, okay, you're coming for me here on what is true, and if I believe in faith in God's timing, and then he smacks him upside the head with the sword, and he says, man will not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God. So Jesus said, hey, here I am out in the wilderness for 40 days. Israelites were out there for 40 years. And in Deuteronomy, it says that you will not live by bread alone. Well, stop complaining about God's provision and timing. Instead, hunger for what he tells you. And so Jesus said, I'm going to choose that instead. And so he, there's a counter, but like there's a cool French word. I don't know what it is, but he gets rid of that attack. And then Satan attacks him differently, depending on which account you're reading. These are not going to be in the same order, but the next one I have in my notes is that of Satan taking him to a high point on the temple and says, you know, if you're the Son of God, you definitely aren't going to die early, if at all, so jump off. And he quotes scripture where it says that he will not let your foot be dashed against a stone, which again is actually scripture, as Jesus has been responding to him this entire time from Deuteronomy, from the perspective of the Israelites in the wilderness. He uses a psalm that talks about the time of Israelites in the wilderness and says, like, God has promised to protect you from premature death. And so he says, like, if you are the Son of God, jump off. Angels will catch you, and then everyone will know that you're the Son of God. And on the surface, it's like, again, Jesus was like, yeah, I could do that. I know angels would catch me. No big deal. But because he realizes that the surface battle isn't just wanting people to recognize him, to have visible response, get accolades and respect from everybody, and be like, let's kick this ministry off with a bang, which Jesus actually goes out of his way to do the opposite. He says, no, instead, the real battle isn't just what I want people to know and think about me, but it's a matter of manipulating God. I don't have that relationship with my God to just say, hey, let me jump off. Like the prophets of Baal, who said, oh, Baal's not listening. Let's shed some blood. Maybe he'll show up then. And Jesus said, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to trust in God's character. And the enemy is trying to get him to say, well, if God really loved you, he'd prove it. And you're out here in the wilderness all by yourself. You're fasting and all of this stuff. And yeah, you're getting ready for ministry. But if God really cared about you, he would let people know it. And so Jesus realizes that he has confidence in his relationship with God and that he doesn't need to put him to the test as the Israelites did. And then he counterattacks with scripture. You shall not put the Lord your God to the test like the Israelites did when they needed water or food. And then finally, the third temptation Satan comes with is he brings him up and he says, look at this whole world that right now I'm kind of in charge of. I put the kind in there because that's not what Satan said, but anyway. And he says, listen, you've resisted every temptation so far, but here's the deal. You're here for this, but I sort of know what it's going to take for you to get it. Alternatively, you could just bow down to me one time, and I'll just give it over. Which reveals Satan's character of pride and self-inflated importance, right? But the service battle is like, you know, power, success, influence that Jesus could gain from one small action, and it doesn't even say anyone was there to see it. So, like, what could be done in secret might never be revealed, but you can then get what you want the easy way. Because the alternative is Jesus living a life and everyone hating him, killing him on the cross, burying him, and trying to pretend like he never existed. So isn't just getting to the end. The end isn't the deal. It's not the circumstances or the order in which they arrive. It's actually about who or what you are going to worship or serve. And Satan wants him to just say, like, you can have God's goals and not get there God's way. So Jesus realizes that Satan is attacking, and he rightfully understands that in order to get it the way Satan is suggesting, he would have to compromise on righteousness and on pure motives. His heart would be in the wrong place, and that it's not true that the world is Satan's to give. It's God's. And if you are going to get God's world, you should do it God's way, which means bowing only to God, not to anyone or anything else, even your own ideas. And so then he counterattacks with a simple statement, again from Deuteronomy, from the perspective of the Israelites in the wilderness, that you are to worship the Lord your God and serve him only. So in each of these, Jesus shows us how to identify the tactic. What is the attack? Where is it coming from? What is Satan looking to do? We, on the most simplistic scale of things, the kingdom of darkness wants us moving away from God. The kingdom of light wants us moving towards God. But Jesus rightly is able to see, okay, here's the temptation is what we like to call it, but here's the circumstance. This is the surface. What does Satan want these circumstances to cause me to do? And if I yield my life to what he wants me to do, I will be moving away from God. But if I yield my life over to God, I will be moving towards God. He also identifies which pieces of the armor, which I understand the whole armor of God is like one thing, okay? But like, it's good for us to think, right? Where's the attack landing? Is it landing on my head or is it landing on my feet? Because you defend differently, okay? So I want you in your discussion to talk about where the attack is coming, which piece of the armor is most necessary to help with this attack, and then how are we to respond? And Jesus was able to discern the real fight versus the surface level. He was able to identify the armor that he needed to have on, and then he also responded offensively with God's truth. So that is what I want us to do with our scenarios. So hopefully, I mean, I didn't see a mass exodus, so that's good. Let me get a quick count, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 22. Okay, so let's do, I got it. Okay, let's break up into 5 squads. For this time, I only do this once. I've got enough, I think we could do it twice. But break up into 5 squads. I'm not going to put in any specific rules other than I would like you to try and mix it up a bit, okay? I don't want all people from one stage of life in one group. I could probably find one scenario that I could give you, but I'm trying to let you all choose, okay? So I do have a couple people. I got Terry and Elaine and Leanne on video. I'm going to put them in some group with either themselves or somebody else. I understand also, for people like me, if everybody in this room starts talking, it might get a little chaotic. So the fellowship hall is available to take a group or two down there. You'll be able to hear, so when I call you and say, time to come upstairs, you know, we can do that. So with that, I'm not even going to make captains. We're just going to do 4 corners and the middle, because that makes a 5, because that's what dominoes is. So I want a group here, a group there, a group in the middle aisle, a group in that corner, and a group back there by Kenny. And go.